0141 951 1025. It's time to talk football. It's Clyde One Super Scoreboard.
Good evening and welcome to Clyde One Super Scoreboard. Norwich knockback Celtic's first offer for Adam Ida. Rangers set their asking price for Cyril Dessers, and could George Hurst be in line for a Scotland call-up? I'm Andrew McLean. Joining me in the studio tonight is Kenny Miller.
Yep, obviously all eyes on domestic action now. What's going on transfer market now that the aftermath of Scotland departing the Euros is done? So obviously a lot of news, new signings. It was always going to be that way for the both sides of the Glasgow teams. No surprise to see Celtic going back in for Ida with the impact that he made towards the end of the season.
Yeah, it really is starting to ramp up now. There is some news in the last 10 minutes or so. We saw earlier on there were reports that Celtic had made their official approach to try and bring back Adam Ida on a permanent deal. It was one that a lot of Celtic fans were looking for the club to do, but there's now been reports in the last, as I said, 10 minutes or so ago, that an initial offer has been knocked back. That is being reported as £4 million plus add-ons, and it's also been reported that Norwich aren't keen to sell him. Their new manager is very keen to keep him around the squad for the new season. So simple question for you Celtic fans: how much do you want Adam Ida, and how much would you be willing to pay for him? 0141 951 1025. There's also been some talk about Cyril Dessers today as well. Reported interest from the likes of Saudi Arabia, France, Spain and Greece. Rangers fans, would you let him go after the season he had? Is he someone you'd rather hold on to? Rangers apparently interested to recoup the fee they got for him as well. So good we've got you here. It's all striker talk today, Kenny.
It certainly is. You know, both sides of the Glasgow divide, players coming in, players going out. Again, it's no surprise to see Dessers linked with a move. I think there was a lot of chat leading at the end of the season that Rangers need to kind of sign another striker in the summer, but I think that was always going to happen, whether it was Dessers or Danilo that was maybe moving out. For me, it was always going to be Dessers. It might have drawn more attention based on the season he had and the fact Danilo was fighting back from his injury. So no surprise to see that. I think it was 23 goals he ended up with at the end of last season, which for all the criticism and stick that was thrown at him over the course of the season, it wasn't a bad first season in terms of goal scoring for Cyril Dessers.
Yeah, let's hear from you. 0141 951 1025. You can send us a tweet at Clyde SSB as well, but we'd like to hear from you on the phones. 0141 951 1025. As I say, the hot topics, I think, today: Adam Ida, Cyril Dessers as well. There's been a bit of drama, I think, with Todd Cantwell potentially being offered to clubs on Instagram to the wrong accounts. We'll get into that a bit later on as well. That's one of these classic Scottish football stories that you come across that you can't quite believe when you first see. And there's also maybe a new name for Scotland fans to get excited about. George Hurst, Ipswich striker, is potentially being linked with switching his allegiance to Scotland, so we may take a look at that later on as well. But 0141 951 1025. We will start with that Adam Ida story. As I say, reports in the last 10-20 minutes that an offer has been knocked back. Celtic going in with an offer of £4 million plus add-ons. Norwich not happy with that. Is that something, is that type of offer one you would expect to get rejected, just given what he offered Celtic in the last sort of 6 months or so?
You know, I think the numbers that were kind of talked about initially were maybe around about the £6 million part, maybe even higher again towards the end of the season. That might have been with a cup final winning goal added onto that transfer fee. So I think when it gets to this stage, it's a negotiation. You know, the club are going to ask for probably a higher amount. The buying club are going to come in at a lower amount, and they'll eventually meet somewhere in the middle. I mean, I got the impression towards the end of last season that Adam Ida had really enjoyed his time. You know, obviously speaking after the cup final, he's got a league medal around his neck. He's got a Scottish Cup final winning goal and medal as well to his name. So he clearly enjoyed his time at Celtic, and I expected him to be back in some kind of capacity. It was a case of how much is it going to cost. So Celtic, if they want him and they want him bad enough, they'll have to pay the money. And he's also a player that, with a managerial change, I can understand the chat coming out of Norwich, but from the player's perspective, he wasn't getting a game for them in a championship last season. So he'll still have those types of feelings towards what had happened before he went to Celtic. And there's no doubt, winning cups, winning leagues, potentially Champions League football for him if he comes to Celtic, that's it's an exciting package for him. And I'm sure it's probably one he wants to explore.
Is it not only the goals he scored, but the value in the goals he scored as well? He scored in big games. He scored against Rangers. There was those two goals late at Easter Road, weren't they, from the penalty spot he scored there, that, you know, he showed that he had the nerve at the right times. He was able to step up at the big occasions. Not all strikers are capable of doing that. Some strikers, I think Mark Wilson was saying last night, maybe only come on and score when the team are already 3 goals up or 4 goals up and just sort of add to it. But he was scoring vital goals for Celtic at big times.
No, he certainly was. I think there was a couple at Motherwell as well that was in a comeback game. So he not only adds value in terms of the goals and what his goals actually brought to the team and what the team achieved through his goals, I just think he brings a different dynamic to that front line. You know, Kyogo is all about his movement and living on the last line, constantly making his forward runs and obviously being in the box to finish them off. Like, he's done incredible with his goal scoring himself over the last 3 seasons. Adam Eder brings goal scoring, he brings power, he brings pace. A different kind of movement, but still pretty effective. And I think you've seen with the way that Brendan Rodgers utilised them towards the end of the season, it was becoming more of a, is it going to be Kyogo? Is it going to be Adam? Rather than just Adam either being the backup. You know, there was big games, like the game at Kilmarnock at the end of the season. He got the start and he was excellent on that night. But like you say, when you weigh in with Old Firm goals, when you weigh in with cup final winning goals, there's always going to be a value placed on what you've brought to the team. And he brought that in that 5 months he was at the club.
Since Kyogo came in, he's maybe been the only one that has, you know, there's been real debate about him replacing Kyogo in the starting lineup. It was there with Giakoumakis a bit, but because of Ange Postecoglou's relationship with Kyogo, the way he played, it just always looked as if Kyogo was going to start. Brendan Rodgers, he was the one that sort of brought Adam Eder. He was the one that had highlighted him, said he was the player he wanted. He's spoken in glowing terms about him. So you can see exactly why Brendan Rodgers would be keen to bring him back up the road.
Yeah, it is, because he adds value to the squad. And that's when you're bringing a new player into a squad, particularly the big clubs, they need to be bringing something. They can't just be, firstly, they can't just be happy to come and sit and watch. They have to be wanting to play. They have to be pushing the guys that have got the jersey. And that's what he done. You know, and there was genuine chat among Celtic fans whether they felt Adam Eder was the guy to lead the line or Kyogo, which was incredible to think of the status that Kyogo's got at the club. But it shows the value of what Adam Eder's attributes bring to the team. You know, they do give them that different. I can't help take my mind back to the Old Firm game at Ibrox, where Rangers were getting on top of Celtic in the second half. It's where they're 2-0 up and it got to 2-1, and straight away Brendan Rodgers got Kyogo off and put Adam Eder on, because they needed to go a little bit more direct. They needed to have probably a bigger presence up front, a more physical presence to cause problems. And he did. I mean, listen, the game finished 3-3. He got his goal. But what he done is he gave them that out ball. And I think he caused Conor Goldson in particular real problems that day. So that's the kind of difference in profile that Adam Eder brings. There's a debate now, I think, amongst Celtic fans, maybe even in Brendan Rodgers' mind. Is that the better profile we start with? You know, so it's great when you've got two top quality strikers like you have at your disposal as a manager. That's great, because you can pick him, you know what he's going to bring, and if they're both of them at the top of their game, then you're on to good things.
Well, let's hear from you. 01419511025. You can send us a tweet at Clyde SSB as well. When there is one of these loan deals, it's not a loan with an option to buy. There's no set fee in there. 4 million and add-ons may well have got Celtic Adam Eder had a permanent deal in January, but just because of what he did during that period, Norwich might see more value in him. Celtic then might have to pay more for him. Is that just the way it works? You have to take these risks sometimes.
Well, listen, again, there's risks both ways. We've already discussed the risks that Rangers have taken, potentially committing to the Oscar Cortez kind of transfer fee maybe next year. So I think when Adam Eder came in, there was obviously the difference in, again, they were always looking for that type of profile like Giakoumakis brought. Somebody could bring goals, somebody could be a little bit more physical. The risk being now that if he comes in and does great like he had done, that transfer fee might rise, because particularly when there's a manager change, it's all probably fell wrong for Celtic in respect to that. The managerial change, you probably want to assess everybody, which that will be going on right now. You know, it'll be going on right now. And the thing is, that would have been one of the first things that landed on the new manager's desk, was like, what are we doing with Adam Eder? Because Celtic are interested. He was out on loan. We thought he wasn't maybe quite at the level. But he's came up and scored goals for Celtic in a big club. And like you've said, at big moments, big goals that have meant a lot for the team. There's no doubt he would probably like at least a few weeks to assess where he's at, and then he can make it. But I still think Celtic are in a position where they've probably got the player. You know, I mean, the player, people forget, yeah, there's two clubs going at it, but there's also a player and a person there. He'll let his feelings be known. So there's no point in holding out for this big higher transfer fee if you're going to have a player that's unhappy. So I genuinely feel if they're entering negotiations as well, I think at some point between valuation and what that opening bid is, I think they'll probably come to an agreement somewhere in the middle.
Celtic fans, easy question for you. How much should Celtic be willing to go to get Adam Eder? Reported that £4 million plus add-ons isn't enough. Norwich have rejected that offer. So how high should Celtic be willing to go to get Adam Eder? Give us a call, 0141 951 1025. Rangers fans also interested in your thoughts on Cyril Dessers. Did score, was it 22 goals this season, but reported interest from other clubs. Rangers maybe looking to recoup the fee that they got for him, or they paid for him, sorry, last summer. So 0141 951 1025. And as always, you can tweet us at ClydeSSB. Let's go to the phone. Simon is in Kilmarnock. Simon, how are you tonight?
Hi, guys. How are you doing? Hope you're all well.
You too. You too. What have you got for us tonight, Simon?
Yeah, so a couple of points. One about Scotland, one about, and then going on to discuss Kilmarnock, if you don't mind. So the one on Scotland is, I see the rumours are that Steve Clark's going to stay, and this will be no surprise to anybody who's heard me on here before that I'm happy about that. I don't think that Steve was the main reason of why we didn't do well. I think we could see the writing on the wall in the pre-season games or the games in the build-up to it. We have a really good first-choice 11 that's really balanced and you know, really strong. But when you're missing some of those key areas, so the right wing-back, it makes the team unbalanced when you don't have somebody like Hickey in the team. Up front, you're missing Lyndon Dykes. Again, he's obviously not the greatest footballer that's ever been, but you know, he brings the team up the pitch in a way that other players don't and stretches the game, which is something we didn't have. And then obviously you lose Kieran Tierney as well halfway through the tournament. So I think that was that we're always going to be struggling, especially when we're having to go to guys that aren't coming out and aren't good enough. But I think that something I've heard quite a few times is people saying that Steve Clark's a defensive manager. He's always defensive. That's how he's always been. I hate to break it to people because I know you probably only see Kilmarnock when they play against Rangers and Celtic, but at times when we're playing against other teams, especially the time we went, I don't know if people remember this, but we went top of the table in December under Steve Clark, and the football we were playing in those first 6 months, we had Greg Stewart on the left, we had Chris Buck on the right, we had Chris Boyd and Eamon Brophy up front, and we were playing some attacking, really exciting football to watch. And I think people forget that because they maybe only see us against Rangers and Celtic when we're more defensive. So Clark is definitely capable of that.
Is that the disappointment, Simon, that during the games, during the major tournament we just saw, the major tournament before that as well, that you know, you talk about the attacking football that Steve Clark is capable of playing, that we didn't really see any evidence of that across those six games?
I think that he was hamstrung a little bit he's maybe a pragmatic coach by default sometimes. You know, if things aren't going well, he'll go back to pragmatism. I think that he probably should have brought somebody like Danny Armstrong into the team. I think we saw with Anthony Ralston, whenever the ball went to him, he turned back every time. You know, if he wasn't giving the ball away to somebody in the opposition, you know, he was coming back and passing a dangerous ball back to one of our defenders. You know, that just makes the team lopsided. I don't think we could have been any worse with Danny Armstrong, who played the full season at right wing back for Kilmarnock pretty much. Scored plenty of goals, set up lots of goals. I don't think we'd have been any worse with that, but yeah, it's a disappointment, isn't it?
If Steve Clark was looking for that more attacking option at right wing back that maybe wasn't Anthony Ralston, the option of James Forrest was there. I know he's not a traditional right wing back, but he has played in that role before for Steve Clark's Scotland. So the fact that he decided not to do that, was that just a sign that he was never really going to go attacking from that side anyway?
You know, I just think that it didn't need to be Simon makes really, really good points about Danny Armstrong, and I agree with him on all of them. I thought he was one of the guys that maybe could have came into the squad with the injuries and with the extended squad. I thought he could have just gave you something a little bit different. Like James Forrest, he is a wide player, but he had played in that position a lot. And the one thing about him, one of his big assets for Danny Armstrong, is his work ethic. You know, he works ever so hard for the team. So as long as you can do that and you can run and you're fit, you can actually play in that role. Particularly for me in the last two games, it might not be his start, but if you wanted to kind of stick with the same type of system but have a different type of threat, then you put someone more attacking in that role. Somebody who, when they get the ball, like Simon says, rather than be thinking, oh, I'm a bit kind of scared maybe to go forward or look forward or go back. Somebody, the minute they get it, are going to drive. The minute they're going to have an attacking mindset that they're going to can either take the ball forward and dribble and carry it and get the team up the pitch that way, or look forward to pass and then run forward. You know, and Danny Armstrong, James Forrest, these types of players could have done that. So I understand it was a frustration for me, because I thought we never utilised, we've not got a lot of attacking talent in the squad, but I don't think we utilised what we did have as much as what we could have, particularly in these last two games where we knew we needed to win one of them, you know, and we end up with 1 point again, similar to the last Euros back in 2020. We just never done enough, and I don't think it was, again, going back to Steve Clarke, he's got choices and he had options. Like, they might not have been the best options in the world, you know, but he did have more options that he could have threw a little bit more caution to the wind. And again, just to make on going Simon's point, he just named the four reasons why they were really, really good attacking, by the way. Burke, Boyd, Brophy and Stewart. You know, they're top, they're really, really good players. And they sometimes can bring a threat that might not necessarily be the manager bringing that out in them. What he did give them was a real setup and platform to go and those four players really get their strengths involved in the game. So it was disappointing maybe not to see some more. Again, you look at even the last 16 games, the smaller teams that have, again, Slovakia, Slovenia, even Georgia taking the lead against Spain, you know, that they've had goals, they've had a kind of carried more of a threat than what we ever did in any of the six games we've probably played over the course of the last 2 Euros. So that's where the disappointment lies.
Simon, you mentioned some of the injuries there. Are you confident that with Scotland having the likes of hopefully Aaron Hickey back for the next camp, Lyndon Dykes back for the next camp, you even look at guys that haven't played as much or at all, Lewis Ferguson, and, well, I suppose I don't think he'll be back for the next camp, but maybe Ben Doak adding some real pace that the squad lacks, that Steve Clarke will be able to get some results in those Nations League games?
I think what you might find is that we might change our formation up. I think we might drop one of Tierney or Robertson. I don't think Tierney's reliable enough for us to be changing the whole system and then not have a second option. I think having that pace in the wide areas is how Steve Clarke likes to play. He did as a club manager.
Do you think he would have changed if he was willing to change or keen to change? Do you think he would have done it in that final game when Kieran Tierney wasn't available? Is that maybe a sign that he's going to stick with what he's done for the past few years?
I don't know about that, because I genuinely think if, say, Scott McKenna puts that header in the back of the net in the last minute against Hungary, people will be saying, you know, it wasn't pretty to watch, but we got the job done. You know, we were just hit with that counter attack at the end. I genuinely don't think it was as terrible as everyone was making out. When I was in the stadium that night, it was heartbreaking, absolutely heartbreaking. But I felt like what he wanted to do was, with the team, as I mentioned earlier, being a bit lopsided, not having the attacking threat on the right, not having the guy who can bring the play up front, I think he wanted to be solid and try and just hit on the counter. I don't think we'd hit on the counter as much as we wanted to, but as I say, I think if that had went, if we'd scored that chance right at the end, or we got the penalty, which I don't care what you, if I said we should have had, you know, people would be saying, oh, you know, wasn't bright. We got the job done, we're through to the next round. And then you go up against a better team. You know, we've got a draw against Switzerland to look excellent. We'd go up against a better team, and you know, you'd have had a fancy us against that Italy team as well, sitting in pragmatic and just hitting on the counter. So I don't think that it was the biggest disaster that everybody's making out of this. I really don't think that.
Simon, what about your club team you wanted to mention? Kilmarnock, are you feeling pretty optimistic after how Derek McInnes led the side last season?
Yeah, absolutely. So I saw a 5-0 win today against the Welsh champions. I wish we could have done that when we were in Europe last time. But it was, I'm pleased with the signings. Keeping the consistency, I think, is huge. So, you know, we managed to bring back Stuart Finlay, signing Marley Watkins again. It looks like Corey and Dabba is going to sign. There's rumours that we're still in talks about getting Will Dennis, the goalkeeper, back. So, you know, these are all huge things, especially going into Europe. If we can have as consistent back four or back five and goalkeeper as we had at the end of the season, you know, it's obviously going to be a strength. I'm really looking forward to the season. I think we're going to have a really good season. I've got, you know, obviously Jeremy didn't scare me too much because I've already got my travel to Bruges planned for the game. So I just can't wait to get back into Europe, get back and make amends, I think, for the last time, because, you know, it was embarrassing. I don't think anybody really fancies us to get a result against Bruges. They have their boy Denke up front, who's been linked with all clubs in England and in Germany, and you know, he scored a ton of goals last season. I don't think anybody fancies us, but I think we've got a good chance if we can keep it solid at Rugby Park and then go for Bruges, and you never know.
It's just an exciting tie for Kilmarnock fans, isn't it?
It's amazing, you know, but just European football, it's something that might not have been expected a couple of seasons ago when you're in the Championship, and you fast forward two seasons and you're facing Bruges in a European fixture. I did sense a little bit of danger for Derek McInnes and his team there, because the expectations are already risen, Simon. He's expecting a really, really good season. So if they can improve, which they have done, the way they've, and what they are, come on it. They're a team that are well drilled. You know, when you watch them, they know exactly what they're doing. They play some really, really good stuff. He's already mentioned one of the players in terms of Armstrong. But if you think of players, attacking players last season who had really kind of good times, you're looking at Armstrong, who had a good, Vassell was excellent for them.
Bruce Anderson hat trick today.
Watkins, you've got Anderson, who's again, he's been signed. Watson in the middle of the pitch had a wonderful kind of breakout season as well. Kennedy, they've got, all these guys are good players and they carry that threat and they had wonderful seasons. But see the one thing about them, that every single one of them graft. They graft for their team, and that's what you need within a team. Whether it's your attacking players or your midfielders in the engine room, you need guys that are going to be good teammates. And I think that's what Kilmarnock and Derek McInnes has created there.
Well, thank you to Simon. I'm sure we'll speak to you before your trip to Bruges, and we want to hear from you out there as well. Celtic fans, what do you make of the latest development that Norwich have knocked back an offer from Celtic for Adam Ida, reported to be £4 million plus add-ons? Rangers fans want to hear your thoughts on Cyril Dessers as well, the club reportedly setting their asking price with some interest in him. So whatever you want to talk about, 0141 951 1025.
0141 951 1025. This is Scottish football's league leader, Clyde One Super Scoreboard.
Kenny Miller in the studio with me, Andrew McLean, on tonight's Clyde One Super Scoreboard, and we want you to get involved as well. 0141 951 1025, or you can send us a tweet at Clyde SSB. Up next is Scott, who's a Celtic fan in Barmalloch. How are you tonight, Scott?
Yeah, good evening, guys. I'm all right, no bad. Looking forward to the season. Going down to Ayr on Friday night, so we chance to see their new stand. And also, I'm not going to see any new players, but it looks it.
Yeah, is that something that's playing on your mind, Scott?
Well, going back to Brendan Rodgers' first time in charge, I didn't want Brendan back in the first place, right? So I'm probably got a bit of an agenda, as some would say. And last season when we lost the first cup of the season in the first round at Kilmarnock, sort of heightened that. I was one of the vocal ones. The last 6 weeks to 8 weeks of the season, he just went with tried and trusted players, and I can understand probably why he'd done that. Some of the fringe guys or guys that we'd brought in just weren't doing it. So we ended up the season probably playing with a team, apart from probably Adam and I, that was basically there before he signed any players. My problem is the South American Cup just now, which we've got two players playing over in, Alistair Johnson, Cameron Carter-Vickers, both of them are still in that tournament.
The US have been knocked out now. Scott, the US have been knocked out. They finished third in their group. Yeah, they lost to, was it Uruguay in their final game? So they are out. So Cameron Carter-Vickers will be on his way back.
Well, he won't be, because the guy needs a break.
Yeah, that's the thing. He certainly will get a break, but I think Celtic then go out to America for their pre-season in a week or two. So you'd expect, Kenny, that he would be back, you know, that he'll get some sort of break, and then he'll be back and ready for some pre-season friendlies and then into the season.
Yeah, you would expect, again, sometimes the way these things go, depending on when you're kind of going on your kind of pre-season tours, is maybe the players with internationals will just kind of, that'll be their kind of time to come in, mm-hmm. be ready to be on the plane and go, because you're right, Scott's right, they need a break. You know, it's had a long, hard season, there have been a lot of games played, and to go away with an international tournament at the end of the season, it's not just the game time, it's the 2-3, sometimes 4 weeks camps before the tournaments to get prepped for it. You can't afford to have too much time off going into these. So there's no doubt he'll get a couple of weeks break, but aye, you would expect to see him on that plane going to the States for their pre-season tour.
But you want to see sort of more new faces on that plane, Scott?
I just finish off my point. You sort of interjected when I was trying to just sort of finish it. My problem is guys like Callum and Alistair and Callum all had injury problems last season, and they went straight away to play with their international countries, which is great for the players, obviously. I'm just worried that these guys are going to just get a couple of weeks off and then rush back into it, and then 6 weeks or 8 weeks into the season the guys are going to start struggling again, and that's what's concerning. But I'm really disappointed. We've got a shedload of money going to come in through the Champions League. We've already piled up quite a bit of money from player sales, obviously, Jota last season. I'd like to see us a wee bit more on the front foot. So, I mean, everything seems to be at Celtic at times. It's a drag. Everything's a drag to get players in the door. Now, I'm not comparing us to across the city, because to be fair, they had a massive squad to rebuild. They were doing it. We're not looking to rebuild a squad. We're looking to prune a squad and bring in better quality players, starting players. Guys like Greg Taylor, who served the club well, is just not going to cut it at the top level in the Champions League. We know that. We know that he gets targeted in games. I was looking to see, I'd have thought we'd had at least three players that were coming in the door like in the next week or so. That's what I thought. You get them in, get them time to get bedded in, get around about the training facility, then as Kenny was talking about, going away on the trip to America. But at this rate, the first game of the season is 4 weeks away, and we've got nobody in the door. I just can't get where our lack of forward planning is. Knowing that guys are going to be away at tournaments, knowing guys are going to come back and need rest, where is the backup?
But if it's that quality that you're looking for, Sean, you want guys to come in and, you know, make the first 11 better, are they not the hardest players to try and get in? Is it worth having a bit of patience about it? Or, you know, do you not think, you know, 4 weeks is enough time and the squad might not be ready for the start of the season if those players aren't in the door in the next week or so?
Maybe I'm being a bit over the top, right? But look at Ange Postecoglou. He came in, he knew the players he wanted, and he got them in. It was no faffing about. January, we brought in O'Reilly, Maeda and Hatate. And what a difference they made to the squad. Three guys that came in and basically went straight into the team and started scoring goals straight away. They came in, we got the deals done. We didn't even know they were happening, to be fair. So I think Maeda was actually signed before the window was open. So all I'm getting at is, every time under Brendan, I've seen this before, we spaff about it at the last minute, try to get players in. We even done it in the January window before he left, if you remember right. He brought in all sorts of, I mean, absolute duff. The boy Toljan, Ollie Buck, you're like, what is going on? So I just can't believe that a club of our size, we want to be a big club. No, I don't like a big club. That's my opinion. I just think we're so long in getting deals done. That's how you miss out on players sometimes. We faff about and faff about. That's my opinion. That's just the way I feel tonight. I just feel like that after hearing the bid for Adam had been knocked back, I'm like, well, you know you want them. How much are you going to pay for them? Get the deal done. Give the fans something to look forward to the start of the season. As it stands just now, we think we're going to be the same squad. And it's actually a worse-off squad because we've also lost a couple of players as well. Even a goalkeeper. We've knew since February that Joe Hart's chucking it. Nobody. Nothing.
When does the lack of business become a concern, Kenny?
Listen, I think Scott makes a lot of good points in relation to where the fans, that's a fans kind of perspective, but it's also the facts. You know, like you've known, I mean, the Joe Hart one's a really good point. You've known you're going to need to sign a number one goalkeeper to come in and place a big character in your dressing room and also a top goalkeeper, and there's nothing been done. I would have little concerns at the moment. I wouldn't say it's not going to lead to a poor. I'm not going to say it's going to lead to a poor start to the season. But I agree with Scott. You would have liked to have seen something. I also agree with him that the rebuild on the other side of the city is far greater. The need to get players in is there's more of an urgency about Rangers to get players through the door, that they are going to actually be able to put a decent enough team on the field to actually compete in these Champions League qualifiers that they've got coming up. But for Celtic, still, what I would say, Scott, is they will have been forward planning. There's no doubt about it. Every single team does, whether it's lower level teams or the big clubs, like you say, like Rangers and Celtic. But for some reason, it's just taken. They're you're not really even hearing.
Celtic
too
have
much.
Also had quite a lot of changes behind the scenes as well. Mark Lawl, who was their head of recruitment, is gone. Could that have a big impact on the business they're doing?
Rangers lost their chief exec and they're still getting their signings done, you know, so like the work should have been done, you know.
Suppose
like,
their head of recruitment did come in ahead of the January window, so has had time to plan.
Listen, there is circumstances behind it that could be reasons behind why things have not been done. I don't necessarily buy into that, because it's not one guy, by the way. It's not one guy that's just sitting at his big desk racking his brain about who they sign. It's a collaboration between a number of, from a team of people. That will include Brendan and his staff also. So they'll know who they want to bring in. For some reason, they might just don't, and it looks like they're not that concerned about it needs to be done straight away. Again, from an idealistic point of view, you want players in, or at least some players in, for the start of pre-season. For all the reasons Scott gave, bed them in, get them to know the club, get them to know the teammates. Again, the pre-season tour is always a good place to go when you're away for 10 days, 2 weeks, and you're locked together. That's where you can start to forge. That's where you'll find out who your mates are maybe going to be throughout the course of the season, who you'll be closer to, all that kind of stuff. So the fact is, Celtic have not, in a 1 month's time, like Scott says, it's the first league game of the season. there's still plenty of time. It's a long old time. But for me, I would have expected Celtic to see at least a bit of movement. Listen, Adam Ida comes in, it's a good signing, but it's also a signing that's already been there. You know, it's nothing new for, like you say, for the Celtic fans to really get excited about. A guy, maybe eventually to sign a guy that might have replaced the Jota position, for instance, or did they sign another midfielder, or that left side of the defence that probably does need to be addressed. I'm sure Celtic fans would have loved to see a little bit more movement than that.
Well, thank you to Scott, 01419511025, to get involved. Scott, Sean, is a Rangers fan in Garthamlock. Scott, Sean, how are you feeling tonight?
All right, guys, how are yourselves?
Thanks, Sean.
Not too bad, yep.
All right, Kenny, mate. What I was going to ask Kenny and yourself, my friend, is it's getting embarrassment about Ibrox if it's got to be at Murrayfield or it's got to be at Hampden. I think the board need to have a hard look at themselves. I would like it to go to Murrayfield because it's a bigger stadium and things like that. But when's the fans, because people are travelling, they put more money together, when has the Rangers got to come out with a statement and actually say Rangers will be playing at Hampden or they'll be playing at Murrayfield? I think they need to do it. It's really the note of, look, actually coming a laughing stock, Kenny.
Listen, I must say it was surprising to hear that news a few weeks back now that Ibrox won't be ready. Obviously, it's due to unforeseen circumstances, hold-ups and whatever it is. But I agree with you, John. I don't think it looks good on the club in terms of, again, organisation. Could you know of, whatever the reasons are, could that not have just been kind of taken out of the equation to make sure you're, particularly with a Champions League qualif, that's the one, like that, when you're going to be dealing with big league games as well, I get that, but the Champions League game in particular, you know, that Ibrox atmosphere has been such an important part of Rangers in their European fixtures that they're not going to have now. And then the next phase is, right, where is it going to be? Maybe Hampden was ruled out for reasons, they might be going to have to beat to Murrayfield. I just think, like Sean says, they need to make a decision. You know, they need to make a decision either way to let the fans know, to let them know where they're going to be, what's going to be their home for that 3, 4, 5 games, whatever it's going to be. So, again, the news breaking today, it might be back to Hampden, which, again, logistically, obviously be easier for the Glasgow fans. But I think as long as they know where it's at, it's a 45-minute drive through to Murrayfield. So, and let's say it's a bigger stadium, you could maybe get more of the fans in there. So they just need to decide, get the decision made, let the fans know, and this situation that isn't ideal, by the way, at least it gets put to bed for the month, for the 6 weeks that it's going to be.
Because there are talks going on behind the scenes. As you say, it looks today that Hampden may well be back in contention, could be an option for those games. And despite the fact that, you know, nothing is confirmed, does there need to be a bit more transparency in terms of, you know, letting the fans know what's happening? Because it does have a big impact on fans. If it is through in Murrayfield, there may be some fans that can't make the journey through to Murrayfield. There are fans that come from elsewhere that, you know, a trip through to Edinburgh just wouldn't really be possible for them. Supporters need to make plans as well. Supporters have bought season tickets. So does there need to be a bit more transparency for the club, or is that hard when there's no hard answer, essentially, and they've not got their solution?
I think between football clubs and their fan base, that there's always a situation with communication. Your fans just want to kind of know, particularly in these types of things that directly affects them. You know, so I think when it comes to these types of circumstances, the club should be, again, doesn't need to be statements every single day, but just letting them know, because like you say, it looked like it was going to be Murrayfield for a while. When I was actually thinking, had that Man United friendly been arranged with that in mind?
Mm-hmm.
You know, because that was for me, it was a strange thing. But clearly they knew Ibrox wasn't going to be available to have that friendly. So they already knew this, because that was announced months ago, by the way. So that's where I think, right, fair enough, you've kind of had a fair idea potentially that this might be a situation. Why is it not being organised until now? You know, whether it's Murrayfield, like you say, whether it's Murrayfield or Hampden, it's not ideal based on the big fixtures that Rangers are going to face at the start of the season. But at least have that kind of in your mind that the fans are also going to be affected big time with this. You know, so let them know, because like I say, I can't help but shake the feeling that this game is planned with this in mind.
Sean, Kenny was mentioning there the impact that it could have, you know, on the team during games, with, you know, the Ibrox atmosphere during European matches has helped them a lot. Maybe not having that, is that a concern? And it's looking into the league games as well.
Well, I think the European nights at Ibrox, especially in the Europa League, I think I've been to the games, Kenny's obviously worked at the games on TV. I think Rangers' atmosphere at Ibrox the last couple of years has probably improved, but obviously having more fans at Murrayfield, I think it would be a wee bit more advantage, because we're having even more of a fan. But if it's going to be at Hampden, I'll take that as well, because obviously it's close I get to. I'm just not a fan of Hamden, I must admit that, but Murrayfield is all for me, but I just want to know basically where we're going to be playing, because it's Rangers we're talking about. They'll probably make a statement 2 weeks before kick-off, and I think that'll be a disaster.
Kenny, is there an obvious preference for you? You've obviously played plenty of games at Hampden. You've played and scored for Rangers at Murrayfield as well, haven't you?
No, I think, again, what Sean's saying, in terms of the numbers, you can get more fans in there. With that, there may be a chance to try and recreate that type of atmosphere that... that you have at Ibrox. Obviously there is a bit of a familiar feel to Hampden as well. The team plays there probably a number of times over the season, with semi-finals and finals. You also
less
have
disruption overall
players.
With it being the same city.
Absolutely. So I think both of there's advantages to both. Again, either is not ideal, because it's not Ibrox. Like, you're, I just think when you look at the proximity to the stands from the pitch in both of the stadiums, you know, a lot's been made about Hampden, about how far behind the goal. Again, it's very similar at Murrayfield, you know. So it's not going to be that tight kind of environment, that cauldron that Ibrox can create with it, with the energy and the atmosphere that it is on the European night. So it's not going to be Ibrox. So for me, I've not really got a preference. Like I say, I've played at both, obviously at Hampden a lot more, and there is a similar feel to them, albeit Murrayfield's just that little bit bigger.
Well, thank you to Sean. More of your calls next, but first of all, let me tell you about this.
Clyde One. Win £275,000.
Yeah, on Friday, you could receive the best phone call of your life and win £275,000. If not, do it now. Get in the draw for your chance to win £275,000. Text YES to 61025. Text are £2 plus your standard network rate. Enter on our website. Online entries are £2, or call 0330 880 4523. Calls are charged at the standard rate. Over 18s only. All rules for this Rio Network competition are on our website. Lines close at 5 p.m. this Friday, when we'll make the call. There's no phrase, no amount to remember. You don't have to pick up after five rings, anything like that, or before five rings. Just answer the phone and £275,000 will be yours and will be in your bank account within an hour of the phone call. So for your chance to win £275,000, text YES to 61025 now.
Taking your calls on Scottish football, 0141 951 1025. This is Clyde One's Super Scoreboard.
Kenny Miller here with me, Andrew McLean, in the final part of tonight's Clyde One Super Scoreboard. Still time for you to get involved in 0141 951 1025, or you can send us a tweet at Clyde SSB. Let's go back to the phones. Andy is a Celtic fan in Stirling. What have you got for us tonight, Andy?
Hi, how you doing, guys? All right.
Hi, Andy.
Good stuff, Kenny. How are you? Basically, I'm following up on the call for Scott earlier on about Celtic not making any signings thus far, and not really a Brendan Rodgers fan. There was enough negativity last year that surrounded Celtic without us starting the same carry on this year with being divisive. Now, what I would like to say is that could it be that the signings that Celtic are targeting are still involved in either the Euros or the Copa America, where they don't want to unsettle these guys before they actually come out of the tournament?
Could be, Andy. Yeah, it could be. I'm sure yourself as a Celtic fan, if that is the case, you'll be more than happy, because the players are still involved at this tournament, which means they're probably playing with decent enough national teams as well, so they might be coming with a bit of pedigree. But listen, that's a fair point.
Is that something that clubs really think about, though, in terms of unsettling players at major tournaments? You think it should be, but is it, because when it is such a, you know, a competitive market, I saw it flash up earlier on that Bayern Munich have agreed a fee for João Palhinha at Fulham, who's obviously still playing in the Euros with Portugal. Clubs surely won't be hanging about if they want to make those deals happen, just in case another club goes in and agrees a fee and gets in there before them.
What I would say on Andy's point is, it's a really, really fair point. What I would say is, though, if Celtic or Rangers, knowing how it works in Glasgow, are interested in any player, then it's going to break. You know, so that would be something that I would be surprised if there was one that came out the woodworks, right, that you've not heard of. So again, going back on Scott's points earlier, it's just not an ideal scenario. I think when you've, again, a lot's been made about Celtic and all the money that they're going to be getting for Champions League and what they've kind of stockpiled over the last few years, even with the transfers of players as well, that Celtic fans at the end of last season in January wanted to see some of this money spent. They wanted to see improvements in the team. They wanted to see a replacement for Jota. It took Celtic to revert back to James Forrest, such a decorated player in the club, to actually come and provide a bit of a spark at the end of the season when it was most required, you know. So I think Scott would like to have just seen a little bit more action, even a little bit more exciting in terms of the rumour mill. Who is coming in? Who is going to place Joe Hart? I mean, Joe Hart was a big signing to come up when Ange came in. A player of that pedigree, an England international that had won so much down in England. To come back up, I think it was a big signing, and it was a good statement signing as well. But even on that side where you've known you've needed a goalkeeper for now 4 or 5 months, there doesn't seem to be any even names kind of... I've not seen any real kind of names rumoured with that position either. So I understand what Scott was getting at, Andy. I get your point as well. You don't want to be going down that negative road. You need to support your team, particularly the fact that the opposition, the chat that was around Brendan coming back in was incredible for me, considering the level of head coach that Brendan Rodgers is. So you're right, Andy, support your team and stick with it. And again, what managers and clubs need to do, they need to earn the trust of their fans. Clearly, they've got the trust of Andy.
Andy, are you quite relaxed then? You feel that the business will get done? It doesn't really matter if it's not in the next few days?
I refuse to believe that a club like Celtic haven't done some forward planning, and I believe they already know who's coming in. As regards having a stockpile of money, we've got a stockpile of money because guess what? We've ran the business efficiently. That doesn't mean to say that you have to give it to people that aren't worth what people are wanting for it. Simple as. You know, Celtic are a business, first and foremost. Yes, they're more than that to all of us, but the fact is, you don't run a good business with giving your money away for nothing.
How much of that money should be spent on Adam Ida? First of all, is he a player you want to see back, Andy? Reports today of a bid knockback of £4 million plus add-ons. Should Celtic be going back in, and how high should they be willing to go?
Well, I said probably 3 or 4 weeks before the season finished, this was a question either yourself or Gordon asked me, would you take Adam Ida back? And the answer was an emphatic yes, of course you would. I believe that the £5 million, when you have a look at it in today's marketplace that was being spoke about at that time, wasn't bad value for money. I believe Adam Ida will come to Celtic, and I think what you've seen there is the start of a wee negotiation where they'll probably meet somewhere between the 4 and the 6.
Can you see that being the case, Kenny? Do you think it could be between 4 and 6 million? Is it quite hard to tell? The fact that the sounds coming out of Norwich today are that their new manager is keen on him, doesn't want to sell him, could that drive the price even higher if Norwich have a price tag on him?
Listen, that's the new manager's job, is to get the most money for his players, the best value that he could potentially get to then reinvest. So it's no surprise to hear him talk like that way about Adam Ida. But I've already said it, Andy, that what Andy's just said there, I think there'll be an agreement reached, whether it's in the next few days, whether it's in the next few weeks or whatever. I think there will be an agreement made on Adam Ida between Norwich and Celtic, and that will be, again, whether 6 million is the figure or 8 million, I think at some point there'll be a meeting, there'll be an agreement, and Adam Ida will be back at Celtic next year.
Well, thank you very much to Andy. A final point I wanted to touch on, reports today that Scotland could be eyeing up George Hurst. Ipswich striker, 25 years old, has played through the England youth system, the 17s, 18s, 19s and under 20s, where he scored 7 goals in 13 games. Was, you know, a key part of the Ipswich Town side that got promoted last season. Just Scotland looking again, maybe south of the border, to see what players have Scottish heritage that could make an impact.
Listen, I think it's after the Euros just finishing there, that's one thing it probably would do lacking in attacking players. I think you need to look at all options. Again, I even suggested, I know the chat with Harvey Barnes has probably went, but that might need to be revisited as well if he's kind of willing. The good thing about George Hurst is he's willing. He's making the statement he's willing, and if he's willing to come to Scotland, then fair play to him. He's had a wonderful season, and he'd be welcoming into the squad.
Well, that's the thing with these one-hour shows. We don't get through half of what we want to, but the main thing is we are back tomorrow night. I'll be in the studio with Simon Donnelly, so make sure to tune in then. Get your calls in, get your tweets in as well. Remember, you can catch up on the show wherever you get your podcasts. You can watch the whole thing back on the live stream on YouTube, Facebook and Twitter by searching Clyde 1SSB. Stay right there. Callum Gallagher is up next, and he's chatting to Scottish singer-songwriter Joe Goodall.